Ready or not, Schwartzy?
Ready or not, here it comes.
Spur, morning, Hurley. Morning, Kerry. Morning, Spur. You ready?
Morning.
And we got Spur Watson all the way from, Central Montana?
Yep.
A saddle maker that we've known for a little while, and we've sat back and marveled at his progress over the last few years, and welcome to the poop show here on our radio disturbance.
Well, I appreciate it.
Emerging artist competition, I suppose. Wasn't that where I met you, Spur?
Probably, but I wasn't involved in that. I just came down with one of the other participants. Dusty Smith was who I traveled with when I met you guys. And then, did a few little shows here and there with the TCA and the symposium and kind of got going into that.
That's cool.
We haven't had Dusty on here yet, have we? I don't think
so.
We need to reach out to him.
We'll get confused. Yeah. We had Dustin, which is Dusty Hyde, but we can't, not Dusty Smith.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, awesome. Welcome to the deal, man. Are you full time, I suppose?
I am. Yep. Been full time for this is my fourth year.
Cool. Good deal.
Yeah.
So we've had some established craftsman artists and stuff on here, and you would think that I have access to these analytics and stuff, but you know what? People really like to hear from people who are up and coming. So that's been I don't look at them very often, but those analytics, they show that people are really interested in people starting out. Not necessarily high name recognition people. So.
I think the collectors are all the time interested in who's up and coming. I get questions, occasionally, like who's the next, who's the up and coming, and they look at it as an opportunity to. I mean, because all of our work is in the beginning has collectability, right? Even though we may think that it's not so good looking. Yeah, but it has collectability, and so I'm excited to share where you're at, Spur, and what's going on. I think it's important at all levels. It's important to share that story.
Right.
Collectors be liking it.
Yeah.
And define collector, Schwartzy.
Collector?
Yeah.
Well, I guess that the classic definition would be those people who collect this stuff and never use it.
That's the traditional,
but yeah. Really, and I guess to me, and I think this is probably where Wilson's coming from, is the collectors and the users of this stuff that's a blurry line. Mm-hmm. I don't collector, cowboy, whatever. To me, there's those pieces that probably never see the back of a horse and stuff. But to me, that's equally relevant. To me, that's just as relevant as those people who are using it every day. So
anybody in my order book's a collector. It looks like to me.
There you go.
Anybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, I've got some clients that are really really good friends that they don't. They collect, but they use everything that they have.
Sure.
One family's got four or five of my saddles now, and they're constantly on my books.
Yeah,
you'd label that a collector. I kind of took us on a side street here, but I when we were talking about people being interested in your work and collectors, I just think it's important that we understand that that's a lot of different people. Right, that one family, Spur. That's a collector, and so they have. And when we say early, I mean you probably feel like 4 years into this deal, you've been doing it forever. But when you're 30 years into it, the first 5 years will be the early years, right?
Right. Well, like I've been building since 13, so I started back. I mean, I've been at this for
long. Over 10 years. I knew you.
Also, but. Only full time because I've always worked on ranches and built, a little here and a little there. In the last 4 years, it was either time to move on and get another job or go to work for myself. And I decided, heck with it, I'm going to try it for myself.
Have there been challenges? Learning
curves? Yeah. Yeah, there's always challenges, you know, just trying, you know, you're always stressed out, worrying that, oh, you know, well, maybe I'm not going to get the orders, and, you know, and where do you live, what do? How do you take care of all that stuff, and, you know, luckily, my wife and I, we both work in the shop, and we caretake a little place, so, I mean, there's a little bit of time out of the shop there, but we're really fortunate with what our situation of, hey, we don't have to pay rent or pay a mortgage at the moment. Mm-hmm. We're putting money aside for that. But, we've just got a really good spot where we're at. And, just trying to get everything figured out those first few years of going full time. Trying to figure out your layout, your designs, your efficiency, and your whole new shop. Like, we've redesigned our shop 3 times since we moved in.
Most awkward, that those first 10 years has got to be the toughest. I mean, it, probably in any business, but trying to get all those planets lined up, getting your pricing figured out, collecting the collectors, if you will, getting those, that clientele lined up so you can stay busy, and efficiency, all of that kind of stuff. Here I am in my 5th decade building and stuff, and wow, do I have it figured out? Please don't watch me.
I was going to say that, you know, do we ever figure it out? I think it becomes easier, like we were discussing before we pushed record here. The podcast is becoming easier. We have a routine, but is there danger in falling into a routine and not evaluating? You know, you got to evolve, I think, and it becomes easier to your process becomes easier, but you better continue to look. Is that what you're saying, Schwartzy? You know,
absolutely. You got your head on a swivel all the time, you're in a problem solving mode the entire time. And so, to me, it's, and I listen to TJ, my son's got a podcast that they have occasionally with a knife maker, and they were talking this week about optimizing, and TJ's gotten to be quite the optimizer with the way his knife manufacturing business has gone and stuff. And it occurred to me, you know what it is. It's just another form of craftsmanship.
Sure.
So Spurrier, you talked about redesigning your shop space 3 times in a pretty short period of time, probably.
Right.
That's just a spirit of craftsmanship. You approach everything from a craftsmanship standpoint. You're trying to figure out, if I've got 10 steps in between workstations instead of 2 steps, I need to shorten that up. I need to find a way to get that efficiency going. And how do I make the next cut a little better than the last? All of that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
So,
you know, and it's difficult too, in a way. You know, where we had it was, you know, since, like I said, my wife and I both work in the same leather shop, you know, and we're in here all day, every day together. So she's got her side of the business that she does of her own. Then I've got my, the saddle portion. So we're crossing paths and in each other's way and, you know, just doing stuff like that, and you're tripping over each other, and then, mm-hmm. and then you're going, you know, why the heck are we doing this? Let's move stuff around where we each kind of have our own side. We still cross over, but it's a lot less now.
So what is she doing? What's her? You're doing saddles. What's she doing?
So she builds a lot of like custom duffel bags, women's tote bags. She trying to get into the wholesale deal a little bit with earrings and bracelets and a few other things, just to, you know, she really enjoys doing the little stuff and out of Italian leather and just really nice hide. She tries doing more kind of luxury handbag type deals. And
cool.
So she was able to win Pendleton this last year with her bag there that she designed. Doing high-end stuff a lot more than what I feel like I do.
Don't short circuit yourself and on that stuff. So it's a lot of what we talk about too is this attitude of abundance, and I think that's a big part of looking at whatever we do is with an abundant attitude, and what we have to offer is valuable.
So, yeah. Right.
Well, you grew up on a ranch in Montana, did you not?
I did. Yep. Grew up on a small place just outside of Billings, over by Pompey's Pillar, right there on the Yellowstone River. And yeah, grew up on a little place, and then we had a few, 100 or so head of cows, and helped out doing that stuff and after school and before school sometimes, and all through the summer, and put up our own hay. And then I got out of high school, and I kind of left and just went on about my deal.
Mm-hmm. When did you become interested in saddles?
I didn't always do leather work, but I started a little bit there, probably my senior year of high school, and then I'd do a little here and a little there. Built some shops and whatnot in college for some friends, and of course had to borrow somebody else's shop to do it. And it was you're muddling around in the dark trying to figure out what the heck you're doing. And probably it was right after I got out of college, moved down into Wyoming. I was there for a bit, and funny part is Dusty Smith is actually the one that built me my first custom saddle, because I had no clue what I was doing at that point. And the more I got to looking at that saddle, the more I'm like, I should try building one of those one of these days. And moved back into Montana after that, and a friend of mine had gone to a saddle school, and goes, I'm going to be building saddles. Well, heck, I might as well try it too, two at once. And muddled around, and I stared at that one that Dusty built and looked at a bunch of pictures. And it took me 6 months to build a full rough out that, it was functional. It wasn't pretty, but it was functional. And I ended up riding it for a year or 2 years, and then ended up selling it because I started, building a new one for myself, and still had that one from Dusty. And just kind of went from there. The first year I thought, if I like doing it, I'll keep on doing it, and if I don't, at least I got a saddle.
So while riding that first one, did you say, my butt hurts a little bit here, maybe it hurts a little bit there, maybe I need to change this? Was there an experience there?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I always, and I do this to this day, is I'd always, get around a bunch, a big group of guys, day working or working on a place, and say, hey, go sit in that saddle, see what you think. Tell me what you think and be honest about it.
Yeah.
And, went to a branding and, had friends sit in it and go, this is this, I maybe change this a little here or change this a little there. And, the more and more you get out and, you get into the world of, saddle making, I'm this far in and I still feel like I'm a beginner. And you sit there and you start talking to people and you ask questions and you ask for critiques, and you just start getting better incrementally, and the more the more you learn you don't know.
I've been involved in some conversations over the years, and I'm not a saddle maker, but we're all sitting in each other's saddles. Well, I don't like that one, that damn thing. And so I can't imagine being a maker and being a part of a conversation like that, because it was brutal in a way,
Oh, absolutely.
Like, gosh dang, that saddle's too flat and it's square here and there's this and there's that. Well, that one comes up too far in the front. And I'm sure y'all receive an awful lot of quote-unquote opinions.
Oh, man. Yeah, and the deeper you dig into that, I'm sure, Spur, that's part of what he's seeing out there is that, wow, there's disagreement at
every level.
At every turn, high levels, low levels. It's just, and that's the thing is early on, when I started in this shop 41 years ago here in this little town where I live, and every cowboy that came in had an opinion about this or that. And they'd talk about, I need this seat narrow. I bobbed my head, and that's what we need. And boy, it took me a long, long time. It was probably a conversation with Chuck Storm before he said, you know, when they say narrow, what they mean is comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
But both of those terms, pretty subjective. So
yeah.
What does it look like? You've got my templates. Don't you have a set of my templates?
Yep.
I don't remember hearing any feedback. What do you think
of
those?
So like my ground seat actually does differ a little bit from yours, but it is minuscule. I mean, it's on the very edges, or, you know, it's a little here, a little there. I mean, they're all pretty close.
Pretty close, yeah.
What's a template?
Well, I developed these templates here, I don't know, it's probably been 20 years ago now. By that time, I had of course, enough repetition where my seats were pretty consistent, but what was happening was people were coming, by that time I had some repeat customers coming back, and they might say one of two things. Well, I want another saddle, and I want you to do what you did before. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I have no idea what I'm going to do. Or they would say, I would like you to change it from what you did before. In either case, I didn't know what I did. So I needed to approach it more systematically. And so I developed these templates. It's just a basic four positions in a seat. So it's the side-to-side shape moving from the cannel forward.
Mm-hmm.
And it just keeps you honest, keeps you consistent. And so if somebody at some point wants something a little different, we have a baseline. And to me, this is what I talk, people probably heard me talk about. Systematic craftsmanship is the best practical craftsmanship. And this is just an example of that, is that to have a system, a framework that you work within, doesn't mean that we don't reorganize the shop. That doesn't mean that we never change this. It just means you have a base to start from,
mm-hmm.
and then you can move from there. Feel the need to.
This is getting real close to technology talk, so maybe we should move on.
Move on. Technology. Uh-oh. I don't want to get into any more trouble.
We're talking saddle making here, guys. I'm just, okay. Clickers.
Yeah. Clickers, yeah. Well, yeah. I cut my small parts out on a clicker.
Oh, he shouldn't have said that.
Did I? Oh,
no. You
should have
said that. Did you hear that, Spur?
I did. Although I am a little bit jealous because I wish I had a clicker.
You know, it there's a lot that happens after the initial layout process, right? Whether you got a template or a clicker or whatever the hell you want to use, an awful lot goes into the creation of a one of one. So, and just because you have templates, that doesn't mean they're all going to be exactly the same, right? Your seats?
Not necessarily.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, you can have that template, but you can still have a little bit of variation from the front to the back, you know, the dish, the cannel, mm-hmm. How your binding sits on the thing.
Yeah.
That can all kind of be subjective. Some days it works better than others. Some days you got to take a hammer and kind of convince it to go where you want it to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the craftsmanship comes in, probably, in that you understand how to manipulate and adjust a foundation to perform the way you want, where like a production piece with clickers and all, well, the lack of, this is going to sound terrible, but the lack of craftsmanship or ability to change in the individual that's placing the things together makes them all exactly the same, right? And so that's not who we are as craftsmen. So the tool doesn't define that. The person defines what happens.
You know, in this whole conversation, I'd like to hear Spurs' input on this kind of thing. We asked Chuck Storms, does Cowboy need to be a part of the resume for a saddle maker or a bit and spur maker? Does Cowboy need to be in that resume somewhere along the way? So I'd like to hear your input, and we'll probably regurgitate what we where we're at on things too. So
yeah,
right. Well, and so I've actually had this conversation with quite a few guys that are either builders or cowboys or, you know, or both, and where I don't think you have to be a cowboy to be a builder or a saddle maker or anything, but I think it's really important to get out there and use your product and show people that, okay, hey, I build this thing and I use it. I may not use it like you guys use it or to the extreme that somebody could use it, but by George, I'm out here, I'm using the darn thing. I'm testing my own product. I'm making sure that things are where they need to be. They hang how they need to be. They function correctly. You know, and if they're not functioning correctly, then we need to change. And I think we also need to be really open to the people that have our stuff when they have an issue. Mm-hmm. Saying, hey, you know, my rope's not quite going down where it needs to be when I'm roping and dragging stuff to the fire. You know, my dowel sit up and it's going to cause an issue. So, okay, well, what can we do about that? You know, do I need to change how I wrap my horns? Do I need to change, you know, do I need to change tree makers? You know, because, you know, and nothing against the tree makers at all, but, you know, depending on who you use, they may not have the shape on that horn that is optimal for most people. You know, and that's where I'm really fortunate with the tree makers that I use is, you know, I don't have to modify anything. So I think
it's pretty close to what I would, the way I would describe that. Not necessary, but important.
I'm going to say it this way. So we just had a conversation about templates and with the craftsman in the production shop. So a craftsman doesn't have to be a cowboy in order to create some of this stuff. But in my opinion, they may be limited to a template, what somebody else tells them works and doesn't work, because they really don't have any experience mm-hmm. of actually using it. So their skill set, or not skill set, their understanding is a bit limited compared to the person that does both. Person that does both will have a sense of feel of how to make minor adjustments and it still work, where a person that's not cowboy may or may not have that feel. They can gain the understanding, then gain the knowledge to replicate a product that works really, really well, but they have to rely on somebody else's experience entirely to make that work.
Yeah, that came up. I remember we were talking to Martin Black on a episode last year, I think, sometime and stuff, and that template, as you say, that used to be the shop, you know, the that you worked in, Hamley's, Conley's, right. You know, that was the template. Somebody else, you were a hireling. You were doing what they already did the R&D. Yeah. That was not your job to do the R&D. We live in a different world now.
Yeah.
Right.
And to be able to use this stuff and be able to do a little bit of the R&D ourselves and gather information from people that we trust, it's on us. So I would make the case that, yeah, maybe you don't have to have cowboy on the resume, but you should have some working knowledge of what it is that we're doing here. I think it's more important now than it's ever been.
You got to have the knowledge or you can't create the piece, right? Yeah. I mean, so I don't know. Did I speak too much for you there, Spur?
No.
I thought you'd had an excellent answer to the situation. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the other portion of that too is you put yourself out there and you make yourself more visible, because we all are hermits. We all want to just stay in our basement or in our shop and work. And if you get out there and you get people seeing your stuff and you show that, hey, yeah, I build, but I use my stuff and I, well, hey, maybe I do know what the heck I'm talking about. You get a few more people that sit there and go, oh, hey, I know this guy. Hey, you should get a hold of him, you know. And you end up getting more, you know, essentially you get more business and you get more people to know who the heck you are instead of,
yep.
You know, I've heard of him, but I don't, you know, never seen him. You know, comes crawling out from under the rock when we have a repair that we need to drop off, and that's as much as we ever see him.
Do you go ahead, Schwartzy.
That he's just talking about marketing and branding and yeah. and making yourself available on an in-person basis.
Right.
And that's the other aspect. I think you alluded to that earlier, just a few minutes ago there, Spur. I think that's huge. You can't nowadays, I don't think you can replace that. We got the digital everything, you know, but there is nothing like sitting down with somebody face to face or a brand. I mean, Dale Harwood, that was one of his big advice to me and other people was go to brandings, go to Ropens, go mm-hmm. to places where you're visible and people, it doesn't mean you have to be a top hand. You can't be a top hand at everything you do, but you're there. You're physically right. there.
Right. Well, like I had a situation last summer, you know, local family that we go and help. We go over and brand for a month type of deal off and on. And guy come up out of Kansas and, you know, we were talking a little bit on the way out to the branding trap. And, you know, oh, you know, asking, you know, fitting questions on his horses. And so I, you know, of course I'm a nerd with that. And so I sit there and visit with him quite a bit on it. And I said, well, when we get back from today, let's go measure your horses. You know, check what you need. Because he was having issues with his saddle rolling and, you know, he'd have to stand in one stirrup as he's dragging something and firing. We're not bringing big calves. And we get back to the, you know, back to the corrals after we're done. And so I go measure his horses and I show him exactly what's going on with his horses. And, you know, I said, well, this is the bar angle you kind of need. And I said, as a matter of fact, I said, I can't be here for the next 2-3 days. I got to get some work done. Said, just my saddle's got this exact bar angle. Take my saddle. You're not gonna wreck it. You know, and if you do, then maybe I shouldn't be building saddles. I said, so go take this sucker and use it for 2-3 days. See what you think. See how it fits your horses. And I got a text from him the next morning going, you know, a saddle is the last thing I thought I needed. Now it's the first thing. He goes, because my horses worked so much nicer. They moved freer. He goes, it's the first time I ever could cinch up without, I didn't have to cut my horse and have to step up.
Huh. Yeah. Awesome. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly what I'm talking about. All right. How do you feel about the customer that saved and sacrificed to get one of your saddles? And they love it. They absolutely cherish it. It's the most important thing they've ever done, just like this guy. But they feel like it's too pretty to ride, so they put it in their house. And they don't use it.
I tell every single one of them, do not hesitate to use it. I said, they're built to use. Please use it.
But they don't. They don't. What do you, I mean...
That's a tough call, you know, because they're, you know, it's it's really nice that they're really proud, and you almost feel like it's a little bit of a slap in the face of, oh, we saved up, we just love this thing, but you know, we're saving it, and I've struggled with that for a while, and I used to be that way. Oh, I'm going to save this, or I'm going to save that. It's too nice. I don't want to take it out, or you know. You have a good pair of pants. Well, yeah, it's good to have a good pair of pants, but by George, you bought them to use. You know, just go use the darn thing, and if you wear it out, then I'm happier. I actually enjoy seeing used saddles more than new ones. I want to see the wear on them. I want to see the turkey tracks from when you got bucked off, because then there's a story.
Yeah.
You know, then it's more personal for them to go, you know what, we saved up, we scraped and scrounged, and we made it work, and we used the ever living snot out of it, and we love this thing. It's the best thing we've had. You know, I like that better than the guy that goes, I just don't want to use it. I you know, it's too pretty to use. Like, well, okay, well, I'll go have the clients that use and abuse, and you know what? I'll fix it. We'll do something. We'll make it work.
It's an honor that they don't use it, but it's hard to swallow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I talk often that saddle or a bit or pair of spurs, whatever, has a certain beauty. It's kind of got a luster. It's got that shiny, you know, new pickup smell when you get into it and stuff. But there's a whole different dimension that happens, a different type of beauty that happens with that patina after something has been used. That's another layer of aesthetic quality. And that's part of it too. It's all tangled up in that functional.
Is it the finish that's on it, or the story that's in it that makes that luster?
Absolutely. And that's what Spurred just a minute ago. That's exactly.
That's what he's saying.
He was telling a story.
Yeah.
It now has another story to tell.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think the three of us are probably all directly connected to the love of that story, right? Like, we've all fell off. We've all enjoyed the bumps and the bruises of the day and the dust and being thirsty and enjoying that first drink of water when you get back to camp, right? It's like there's a real romance to all of that we can have fun with. And when that saddle is sitting in the corner of the house, we feel like it's missing that one little element, you know, that dry, dusty day story. It's missing that. But I really do believe that as we excel in our craft and we go and go and go, there's going to be more saddles in the corner of the living room that aren't used. Would you argue that, Schwartzy, that today in your side of the career, there's more saddles in the corner? And I think I've fought that for a lot of years. And so I'm with you, Dusty. I guess my warning is don't fight it too hard, because it is an honor. But I know exactly where you're coming from. I feel it.
You know what I think that happens is that you have this kind of a transactional relationship with your customer. Does it extend after that transaction? And when you put heart and soul into something, it's part of you goes with that saddle, doesn't it? You're still attached in some emotional way. And that's where, to be honest with you, I don't know if I'm just weird or what, but to me it was a transactional arrangement, and they can do whatever they want. They can throw it in the mud. They can put it on a stand, look at it, have a glass of bourbon and sit in their easy chair and enjoy it, looking at that. And I'm okay. Not to negate anything that we just said about the story and all of that kind of stuff, and there's a new kind of beauty that enters the picture when it's been used.
Our friend Brian Hochstadt, I may speak for him, but he has no qualms about he has an honor that his guns are safe babies, he calls them, right? As they live in a safe, and they're not run through the muck and the mud, because the artwork will be affected that he puts on them. And so it's he's great at it. He's great at understanding that aspect of our business. But I don't know.
On the other side of the coin.
Yeah, he's on the other side of the coin. I may be speaking out of turn for Brian, but in our visit with him, Kerry, that's kind of the impression I got.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's awesome that you're using them, and it's awesome that you're out there solving problems, making people happy. You know, like the old boy that didn't have a saddle that fit worth a crap, all of a sudden he's like, wow. And he got exposed, right? It was educational for him. He got exposed to a quality product that worked. And
right. Well, and being able to be out there and help, you know, going out on these ranches, like I've gotten I've gotten quite a few orders just by going out and listening to somebody and not, you know, not telling them what they need, you know, just, you know, oh, well, you need this or you need that. You go out and you kind of explain how you do things. And, you know, I got those measuring cards for horses, and I've got a really good relationship with Dusty Smith, who's my main tree maker. So I can sit there and I can take those tree measurements and I can send them off to him and go, hey, you know, this client's got a horse that says they're hard to fit. You know, here's all the measurements. Do what we need to do. You know, and being able to explain that to the client as you're measuring the horse and you're going through and you're discussing things, they come away going, oh, I know a little bit more now and I feel more comfortable ordering from you because you took the time to explain. You didn't just, you know, write me off and go, well, you're a dumb SOB. This is what you need. You should know this already. Because so, not everybody's in, you know, doing this stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of moving aspects as far as, you know, saddle goes.
So I'm about to be the dumb SOB. When you tailor, when you measure in your horse for his suit, you're measuring his waistline and his inseam or what?
No, you're measuring up, you know, around their withers, how that bar pad's going to sit on them. You know, you're measuring their back where that tree's going to be sitting so that you get a uniform fit. You know, you don't have bridging, you don't have it, where your saddle's going to rock, where you're going to create pressure points.
So you're doing it with a cloth tape like you would have?
No, so I've got a set of cards there from Dennis Lane, and I can't remember if he's in New Zealand or in Australia, but he produces a set of measuring cards that you can just, they're a hard kind of a corrugated plastic, and you can fit those in certain spots on that horse's back, right where your main pressure points are going to be, and the different rocks and whatnot to get that bar pad to be sitting flush on that horse.
So you're just, it's just a whole bunch of different cards, and then when we're not talking about card playing cards, they're a bigger, more plastic thing. So you did
probably a 18 by 18 card with different cutouts for withers and different wither shapes, and then as you move on back, they get flatter and flatter as your horse's back flattens out towards the butt.
Yeah.
It's a template. It's the same concept as what we're talking about, templates for ground seat and stuff.
Right.
So, I'm somewhat familiar. I'm not subscribed to the Dennis Lane system, I'm curious though. Of course, that dilemma of fitting individual horses that may or may not be a little tough to fit, and you've got a saddle that fits one horse and perhaps not. Right. Others, how do you get around some of that kind of stuff? Do you wind up fitting a type of horse, and that's
pretty much
not necessarily an individual horse?
Yeah. So I have not yet had to build one for one specific horse. You know, that has a, you know, say 100. You know, your normal bar measurements are 90 to 93 degree bars. You know, and I've heard of some guys having, you know, 98 degree bars. I'm not run into that yet. But what I'll do is, especially if guys have four or five head of horses, I'll just say, get them all lined up. Let's measure all of them and see what's going to fit the majority. You know, or if this is, you know, if this is High O Silver, you know, that is just the wonder horse and he's 5 years old and you know you're going to keep him till he's dead, then maybe it's worth going and getting a saddle just for this one. But you better plan on, you know, maybe throwing that saddle in the hole with the horse when he dies. But I try to talk everybody into getting one that's going to fit the majority of the horses. I said, you know, you might have to pad up. You may have to have a cutout pad. You know, you may have to pad differently to fit certain horses, but this is what's going to fit the majority. And that's what I think people, you know, at least they enjoy hearing that of, oh, hey, I don't have to have a saddle for this one horse.
All right.
You know, I can make this thing work for the majority.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that seems like it'd be important. I mean, you got the old warrior sway backed, high withered, nary booger, and then you got the little young quarter horse, no withered booger. It's a little hard to hit in the middle on the deal, but I get it.
Get it. You know, and most of the time it seems, you know, you'll have some folks, oh, you know, I none of my saddles fit. Well, you go look at their saddles and they're not high end saddles. You know, they're getting, you know, what dad or granddad gave to you, and, you know, oh, it's worked for this long, and you're going, well, that tree doesn't fit this style of horse anymore. You know,
right.
Our horses' backs have changed over the last 30 years. And, you know, yeah, they're just, some of these things just ain't going to fit right.
I think it's important to admit the subjective nature of what we do. And I think that's what Spur was just describing there. You're not coming off as a know-it-all, but you, in some sense, there's an expert quality to what you're talking about there, because you're recognizing what you don't know. And right. And I think that's probably more likely the world that we live in now. I think some people just want an expert. They do want somebody who knows it all. Mm. But guess what? Reality and the goalposts are moving.
Right.
How do you, you know, this, and that's where I think it's really important what Spur said there a moment ago, is listen to what your people are telling you, and be, you've got your system, but at the same time, it's not a rigid, immovable system. We can work within this system to accommodate different aspects that come up.
That's the real knowledge, I would say. The more you know about your subject matter, the more you're able to please your customer and truly be an expert. But that doesn't mean you're a know-it-all, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, you kind of have to put yourself behind the eyes of your customer. They do want an expert to build your saddle, your bit, whatever. Why? Because they don't want it. I've saved for this. I don't want this to be an experiment.
Yeah. Right.
And so I get that.
Can do attitude.
Yep.
I can create, right, to please you.
Yeah. Well, and having the confidence of knowing what you're talking about, but not coming across as such. You know,
right.
Going, hey, you know, you say you want this, but are you really sure? Because I've seen it, you know, this, and this prove that that's probably not what you want.
So, do you have to be a cowboy in order to create this? No, but
yeah.
Well, and Wilson said many, many times on this podcast and other places too that you need to kind of filter who you listen to, because for me, I've always defaulted to, you know, those guys that are ahead of me. What did Dale say about this? What did Chuck say about this? Or Don King or whoever, sure, who has many, many more years experience than I do and a lot more saddles under their belt than I'll ever have.
Yeah.
What do they say? Mm-hmm. It's pretty important to listen to those people too. Those mentors out there that we decided we trust.
Right. And in reality, those people they could give you all the information that you need. I mean, how many horsemen has Dale Harwood or Chuck worked with over the years, right? I mean, they have a mountain of information and experience, even though they live their life in a saddle shop, and both of them rode. But you know what I'm saying is, like, we live in a shop, and so there's a ton of information that they could put over on us to have everything that we need and never get on a horse, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well. We got to give a shout out right quick to Adam Schwalm at Saddle House. Got a bit contest going on, and it's all on Facebook, and you can go to Saddle House and you can see all the pictures of the stuff, and you can vote. There's a People's Choice, so the more likes, the piece with the most likes is going to get the People's Choice Award, and then there's an auction that goes along with it too. And I'm not, is it maybe in the comments you can put how much you would want, how much you'd give? Is that how that's working, Carrie? Have you looked at
it? I don't know. I should have done. Now, is that this weekend?
Well, it's going on right now. It's all there. Yeah. It's all up at the Celebration of Champions in Fort Worth at the National Rain to Cowhorse Association show.
Okay.
And then the TCA will be all there this next weekend for our awards. We're giving a complete bridal set to the World's Greatest Horseman competition winner, and then the Open Bridal Class World Champion. We're giving a complete bridal set away there too. So anyhow, go ahead.
$10,000 bridal, two of them.
Yeah.
Donated. So
I have a sneaking suspition that if we added the dollar figure up on each one of them, it'd be over closer to 15.
Yeah, we're there. There was some of us, I think, were working at a little bit of a discount, probably.
Yeah.
But riding for the brand, and so that's going to be exciting. I need to get that event on my radar screen, so I know a little bit more when is what happening and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. A big thank you to Alan Levin and Craig Kirshner, Alan and Nadine, Craig and Debbie.
For supporters for that effort there.
Supporting us and all that. We couldn't do it without them. So talk about donation. It really would be a donation without their support, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, so you two better get prepared Adam had a Hackamore contest last year, or at the Snafflebit Futurity, which wasn't a year ago. That was back in, October? And now he's got the bit competition. Well, I wonder if he'll do a saddle competition.
Yeah, could be. Boy, he's ascendant, isn't he?
Yeah.
he's on an upward trajectory. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. Adam Schwalm. He's a pretty young guy.
Mm-hmm.
Young guy. He's got the saddle house going. And
yeah, I've been following some of his stuff, especially with the bit collection right now.
Right. Really, really
impressive.
Cool stuff.
Yeah. Golly, man, the bit world. We showed up. Bit and Spurmaker showed up. I don't know how many bits he has, but there's a bunch of them.
Yep.
Everybody came with something. That's awesome. I think it's way cool.
Yep. This is the kind of collaboration I think that we need to do more of.
It's just really cool for people to. It's a collection, of things there for people to come look at and see, and everybody's got their favorites. And you know what? It's cool. That's a cool thing to say.
Right.
Put it out there. I don't know. It'd be hard to do. I mean, if there's more saddle makers than there are bit and spur makers, surely, right? You guys are everywhere. Every time I turn around and bump into a saddle maker, y'all are everywhere. But you put 15 or 20 saddles in a space, that space is pretty damn big.
She fills up quick.
Yep. That'd be tough. Yep.
You know, something that I want to, before we wrap things up here, we're talking about collectors and all of that whole
side street I put us on. Sorry.
that whole deal. That, you know what everybody is doing? They're not collecting just pieces. They're collecting experiences. And that's isn't that the common thread? That's the commonality between everybody. Like Alan Levin, shout out to Alan out there in Maryland. He's collecting not only that work that he'll walk into a room and there's a bunch of different pieces there, probably never see the back of a horse, but that's an experience when he walks into that room.
Sure.
There's a story there. Yeah. And just like Spur was talking about earlier, those spur tracks going across the seat, there's a story there, all of that kind of stuff.
You think Alan
experience, aren't they?
Do you think Alan has anything to say right quick? He's probably on the other end listening to this. He sent me and Carrie a picture of the dangest spur tracks I've ever seen. We both giggled. We all three giggled about it. Alan survived and he's fine and nothing was injured, but it was some really cool spur.
Wow. Track. Was that ever top to bottom, boy, that was a spur track. Wow.
It was cool. It was a good one. Oh, well. Well, what's the future hold, Spur? What's the game plan?
I'll just keep on building, trying to, kind of write. I try to write out my goals every day, and for what I want to accomplish for the year and for the day type of deal. And
good on
you. Just keep pedaling down the road. And I've got almost a year and a half, 2 years worth of work lined up ahead of me. And
awesome, good deal.
That's awesome.
Yeah, most of them are not just base saddles. It seems like most everybody wants a little bit of carving or, half carve or so on all their stuff. So, yeah. And then this year, I decided I want to build, 2 to 3 spec saddles per year. And one of them needs to really, really challenge me. So I'm putting ideas away for that. And
good on you, man.
Just one of those deals. There's certain aspects that I look at my saddles and go, I want to know how to do this, or I want to know how to do that. And luckily I got enough people out and around that I can call up and ask questions they've been very, very gracious and are more than willing to help me out as far as, how to design something or, change something here or there to make my saddles even a little bit better.
Good on you, man. That's cool. Challenging yourself and keeping the people happy. That's cool.
Right.
Well, like I said earlier, it's been really fun watching your progress as a craftsman and artist and stuff. Man, you grabbed another gear there a few years ago. You really, really got it going. And it's listening to your story and everything, it's no wonder. Just no wonder that you got the chops as far as your attitude goes. Really cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, and having that TCA scholarship really helped quite a bit with that, because my drawing was always struggling a little bit. I mean, I felt like I did okay, but I wasn't consistent. It was always kind of helter skelter, and you're reaching in, grabbing this random bag of tricks and nothing really works good. And I've gotten where it's like, these are the flowers that really work well for me. This is, I'm always trying to develop new flowers. As a matter of fact, on these next two saddles I'm working on, each one of them's got different flowers on it than I've ever done. So, just trying to branch out and push myself.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That's what it's all about.
Keeping it fun.
Yeah.
Right.
Scratching that creative itch. Very important. And running a business. You're doing awesome.
Well, I'm fortunate. My wife decided she does all the books, so I don't have, because the air turns blue if I have to do the books.
Hey, let me, and if she's a and sounds like she is a craft lady, get her a late Valentine's Day present and hire a bookkeeper. Most greatest thing ever.
Is it? She honestly actually enjoys doing.
Oh, well, there you go. Oh.
Wow. I'm really glad I married you at this point.
Yeah. That is good.
Well, that's awesome that you're in the same shop. I think that's just really cool.
Really cool.
Yeah. I'm really fortunate. I know quite a few people that they go, we couldn't work with our spouse day in and day out. And I'm very fortunate that I can.
Yeah. Ernie and Teresa do a great job of that. Ernie and Teresa Marsh, mm-hmm. they work together all these years, and Teresa's in and out and around, and that's really cool.
Right. And it's really nice for me is, my Kelsey, she knows how to hand sew really, really well. She's taken that to a whole new level than what I do. And there's been a few times where I've been, I may have given myself not enough of a deadline. I just things a little too much, and you know, you're working till 9, 10 o'clock in the shop, and which I don't mind mostly, but there's been a few times where I'm just struggling. I need to get these things done in a short amount of time. She's sewing my cannel bindings. She's billets, edge latigos, punched holes that help me oil. And it's really, really nice to have a partner that knows what the heck they're doing, and they can just step in and go, hey, you need help. Let's get this done.
Wow. Wow.
That is awesome.
That is way cool. Yeah.
I am. I'm probably going to have a similar situation if things go badly at my house. I'll be washing dishes in my wife's kitchen. We'll be working together too, right? I don't think she's going to let me run the griddle. I want to, man. I'm a flipper. I think I can handle it, but she's probably not going to let me do it for a while.
Oh, know your limitations.
Yeah, gosh, damn. But it's still possible we could be working together.
Don't cut off your options. Don't burn any bridges.
Well, I got my alcohol pouring license there at the pizza joint, so I've been tending draft beer bar, right? I can do that. Man,
it's you have to have a license. You have to have
it. Oh yeah, you got $9 license. You got to do pour beer, and I was having to wait too long, and it wasn't bothering me because I'm not a customer at the pizza joint, but she told me to get my own damn license and I could pour my own damn beer. So now I got to put to work. I'm making a pun. It's the truth, though. Oh, well. Well, it's been awesome, Spur. Really appreciate you jumping on this.
Absolutely.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, go give Spur a follow on Facebook, or you're probably on Instagram, too, I suppose.
And, yep.
And, you won't be disappointed.
No.
I appreciate it.
For sure. Well, stay in touch, and if we can help, call us. We'll do our best.
Will do.
Adios.
Very good. Take care.
You too. Bye.